You're nickel. And Josh is ready to go. And Mr. Call, Steve, are you ready to go?
We're on.
All right. All right, good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Calker meeting for a special meeting today. It is Thursday, August 14th, approximately 8:35. We're meeting for a special meeting today on a variety of items. It started out with just the approval of our 2015-17 budget request and supplemental IT plan, but given the pace of things going on around here, I had to add a few more things on. The only opening comments I would say is just thank Dave Thompson for being here today, and Mike. Dave, this now sets the record. I don't think you've missed a when the PSC has released their budget since statehood. Is that correct?
That could be.
Could
before
be.
Before statehood, territory.
Territory. So I was just thinking, it just seems like yesterday, and it was Commissioner Fetch and I and Commissioner Kramer doing this for the session before, and we made the comments. He said, well, probably neither one of you two will be here, but we'll have to wait and see. And now I'm very happy with the team that's here now, but it's funny how the time keeps moving forward. So that's my only opening comments. Commissioner Christman?
I'm ready to go for the meeting.
All right. Julie?
No opening comments either.
Okay. We do not have any items on regular consent today, so I'll go right to the regular agenda. I move the Commission submit the 2015-17 budget to the Office of Management and Budget in accordance with the Governor's guideline.
Second.
Okay. Now, I think probably the best way to do this is I'll probably just hit the 10,000-foot look of the budget, and then I suspect there will be different questions when it comes through. The similar to the last couple budgets that the PSC has put in, you've got basically some budget submissions, what I consider the blocking and tackling of running the agency, where you've got the increases you might put in for certain things on changes in programs, special additions, those things. In previous budgets, we've gone out and asked for, you know, we needed some new equipment upstairs in the reclamation. In this particular budget, we don't really have any new equipment that we're asking for, so it's nothing out of the ordinary. The only thing that is we do to put down is we do have down an extraordinary repairs. We're going to request about $80,000 to do some more upgrades on this hearing room as a one-time expenditure. The overall, I guess, trying to go walking through some other things that in the past session, the 2013-15 session, the commission went in and asked for an additional public utilities analyst and natural gas inspector, and we were granted that. But one of the things that happened is that the weights and measures inspector was then removed from our FTEs, and we're going to be asking for a return of one of those weights and measures positions. After running the program for a while, really four was probably the minimum, not the three that's in the current situation. With the growth of natural gas in the state, we're going to be requesting an additional inspector. And I should say, too, that of all the things in the budget, just as anything on a commission, as we go through the budget process, I think, speaking for myself, you understand that all three of us might not be 100% in agreement on everything on a budget, but we do agree that we're certainly going to submit it forward to the governor's request and then see what comes back, and then we'll go through the legislative process. So I just put that out there. For the staff, our equity, we are putting an equity package in of around $250,000, and it was very challenging, I think, for the three of us to settle in on a number of what that exact equity should be, because you have the Hayes study that says a certain number if you roll it up, and then we have Josh, our budget analyst, who did a very good job with our division heads on figuring out what the market bears on actually the job service study. And there was a lot of difference in there, so we settled in on a rationale that we'll explain in detail when the time comes, but that's in there. The litigation fund that we requested last session for dealing with ongoing litigation, dealing with grain or AML reclamation, that we've requested that additional amount. Not additional amount, it was $900,000 the last session. 150 of that was in our base budget, so we're going to request that 150 in the base budget stay there, as well as the 750 to get it back to the 900. Some travel adjustments, and really I think that the two big things that, and I think we'll have, it's probably the best way is to deal with this later, but the two big things probably are we're going to have a serious discussion in the legislature about whether the commission should have a role in hazardous liquid safety program and a railroad safety program. So as we go through, other than that, I don't think there's anything else that really kind of hits for this level of discussion. I think it's a very reasonable budget submission. The ongoing growth in North Dakota, I think, has caused us really to look at all the structures that we have. And I think what we're submitting forward is a very good first step. and we'll have our chance to go down and talk to OMB once we submit this, which is like tomorrow, right, Josh? Or today you're going to key it in?
Tomorrow.
So then we'll meet with OMB and we'll go through more candid discussion about it. We'll see what comes back out of the governor's recommended budget, and then we'll go through the legislative process when the time comes. So I guess that would be my comments on the budget.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Yeah, I think, you explained a lot of these things pretty well. One of them that I want to go in a little more in depth is on that weights and measures position. I don't even remember the amount of weights and measures FTEs we used to have, you know, if you go back 10 years or 15 years ago, but it was more than four even. And slowly over the years that got whittled down, and last session the governor put in to whittle one more off of there and see how it would work out, and we didn't really oppose that. In our discussions with the two appropriations committees and other legislators, we said, you know, we were willing to give it a try, and the thought being that on the large scales, rather than going out and inspecting whatever percentage of the large scales were being inspected by PSC inspectors and letting the rest of the market just deal with other competitive testers, we said, you know, we would be willing to give that a try. We'll go to one person. We will discontinue actually servicing these scales and doing the testing for them. We will just be a quality assurance program and make sure that the private service companies are doing everything correct. Well, I think that the going to a quality assurance program and not competing with other private scale testing companies probably turned out to be a good thing. But what we found out was that there are a lot of things that were probably not being monitored as well as they ought to be in that arena of large scales being tested by private service companies. And I think what has become clearly evident is that to do a good quality assurance program over a state this size and with the amount of scales and other measuring devices that we have, is going to require that position back in order to make sure that we are, in fact, keeping a good eye on things. So a little bit of just additional history on that we kind of agreed that this was worth a try, and I think we've given it a good try. Our guys out there and moving all over the state trying to keep up, but I do think that second position needs to be added back in.
If I could just comment on Commissioner Crispin's viewpoint. One of the things that the governor's office didn't ask for this time was a reduction package. And for many, many years, the commission's reduction package always, the 3% reduction always was those weights and measures positions. So when the commission looked at things that maybe someone else could do, they offered up those. So it wasn't like that those positions were targeted. It was the commission said we could maybe do this. That's why there was not the pushback, if you will, because we wanted to try it. But also there's the growth out there in the state. You know, as we look at another natural gas position, more natural gas lines are becoming jurisdictional. There's just more things going on in North Dakota that we need to keep an eye on.
I was just going to jump off on some of Randy's comments as well, because the weights and measures is a good example, I think, of a program where we looked at a way to maybe scale it back, but at a time when our state is growing so much, we're seeing so many new scales and new facilities out there that we actually, I think, need to return it to its original position and look at what we need, you know, moving forward from that. So I think that's a good example of sort of what's happening overall in our budget. we're really adapting the state's regulatory systems to our massively growing economy. Really, we're refining these systems for the fastest growing economy in the nation. And so we're going to need some additional resources to do that well. And I think this budget reflects that. You know, it recognizes the additional resources we need to effectively carry out the functions that we are required to do on behalf of the citizens of the state. So I think it's a really good, proactive budget. We are asking for additional resources to increase salaries so we can remain competitive in a very dynamic job industry, and asking for some additional resources in areas that we see growth. So, again, good work, Brian, in spearheading the whole budget staff for making the suggestions that we need to do the job well.
Yeah, I'll just thank you, Julie. What's been, I think, for me, was very helpful to have my two colleagues on the commission during this budget cycle, because the expertise they brought to this budget discussion, I mean, Commissioner Chrisman, former Senator Chrisman, had carried the PSC budget down in the Senate for many years, knows the discussion that goes on in the legislature. Commissioner Fedorchak, coming out of several different administrations in the governor's office, kind of knows what they're looking for in there. So we really had, I think, very candid discussion on, okay, this is how this might be viewed in the House and the Senate. This is how this might be viewed in the governor's office, which let us put something together, I think, that it'll set up for success in the PSC.
So. Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Okay, item BK2. I move the commission submit the 2015-2017 Information Technology Plan to the Information Technology Department.
Second.
This one's a much easier, I guess, to talk about. I don't think we have really any changes other than, I don't think we have any changes. We did the one-time plan for the hearing room. I'm looking over at Steve. It's basically the same ITD request we put in for the care and feeding of our ITD department in the state, or in our office, some new equipment here and there, the cost that we spend. I would throw out there will once again be, I think, significant discussion about where the role of ITD, vice this agency, and the Water Commission, the Attorney General, how that might fit into the larger IT picture. But this is our budget request, and it certainly is appropriate.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And I'm drawing a blank here on what that number was. Josh, what's our, Steve, what was the budget for IT? I can't find it in my notes here.
It's roughly
$500,000. So it is quite a bit of money. It's not like we're talking a few $10,000. So thank you, Josh. Okay, let's see here. Item BK3. I move the commission adopt the supplemental order and issue first amended certificate of site compatibility number 35 to Thunder Spirit Wind LLC 150 megawatt wind energy project, Adams County, siting application, case number PU11-601.
Second.
Thank you, Julie. A little background. In October of 2013, the commission issued a certificate of site compatibility number 35 to Thunder Spirit Wind, authorizing construction of up to 75 turbine locations up to 150 megawatts in a Adams County, North Dakota. In May of 2014, Thunder Spirit filed with the commission application to amend the order. Basically, they were going to a smaller project using 35 Nordex turbines, 2.5 megawatt turbines, so bigger turbines, and a total of 107.5 megawatts. What's significant about this is that we oftentimes will get amendments once we approve a project. Most of the amendments are not of this scale, if you will. This one, the amendment was asking for 18 new turbine locations and 25 shifts in locations. So in following appropriate protocol, in June we deemed the application to amend complete, initiated a notice of filing, a notice of hearing, which provided until July 23rd for anyone to request a hearing. In June, the commission discussed the matter in an informal, and understanding that the June 25th was before the cutoff date request for hearing, and that's not uncommon. Oftentimes, if we can schedule a work session on something, we'll have the work session in advance of the date of when someone can request a hearing. And if someone requests a hearing, then we, of course, would deal with that. And that's exactly what happened in this case, that in July of 21st, basically 2 days before the request for hearing would have been closed, I received a request for a hearing from Bruce and Nancy Seacrest, landowners within the project area. And we basically had a work session on that. Not a work session. We discussed it in a meeting and basically agreed that if someone requests a hearing, we're certainly going to go out there and do that. And I guess the basis of the discussion, I think that I can't speak for the Seacrest, but what prompted the company to amend was that the Thunder Spirit had requested from the FAA to appeal a decision that would allow them to use a higher wind resource in the southwest portion of the project previously approved. When we had the initial hearings, there was, the FAA basically said you can't put turbines in the western part of the project area because they felt that could be unsafe for some of the aircraft coming in and out of that area. When Thunder Spirit appealed that, the FAA came back and said, okay, you can do that, which was basically the basis of all this. So Thunder Spirit's request is to move the turbines into a higher wind resource area. They performed evaluations. There's no exclusion avoidance areas that are in this new optimized layout. Now, the State Historical Society has come back with no significant sites affected. The Adams County Commission amended its local conditional use permit. So really, I think everything has been buttoned up on this. I would just say that it is unfortunate that the company didn't let us know about the appeal to the FAA in our initial hearing, because it's not uncommon, and it makes good sense that we have the initial hearing, that we know what's going on exactly out there. And we could have maybe put some provisions in the initial hearing that said a variety of choices that could have come into play instead of having to go through this, because it was cumbersome when the request came in basically two days before the request for a hearing. So we were all set to do the hearing, and then the individuals withdrew their request for a hearing, so then we were able to act on this today. So I think everything is in order, but I would just, any of the companies listening out there, bad news is not like wine. Give it to us as early as you can, and we'll deal with it. And I won't say this is necessarily bad news, but it's better to have all the information in front of us in the initial hearing, so when it does come back to a amendment, we can certainly be aware of what might be coming. So other than that, I think everything's in order, and I know they're eager to start construction, so that's why we added it today.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I would just comment and point out that this is an example of how the commission really does listen to the citizens of the state when they have concerns about something. We are very focused on providing certain and fair rules so the companies know what they're dealing with. And I think we reached a good compromise here in terms of recognizing what the company needed, and also listening to citizens who had legitimate concerns about this project that's in their backyard. And in the end, the company and the concerned citizens worked it out together. And that's what we're ultimately looking for. But we sometimes hear a lot about how we are ignoring citizens, or how that, we're all about industry, and that's just not true. And here's an example that points to a very specific incident where we listened to the people, were ready to have a hearing, and the company worked it out, and everybody is happier as a result. This is the way our process is intended to work, and it does work like this many, many, many times on the commission. We have lots of examples like this where we've worked things out for the people on a project that tweaking things so it's more amenable to them. And so thanks, Brian, again for spearheading this issue.
Is there any further discussion?
Yes. One of my frustrations for many years with wind developers in general, I'm not talking specifically this one, but in general, has been that while they seem to have a laser-like focus on pleasing landowners where they're going to put turbines and local government entities, they seem to have almost a complete disregard for the opinions and feelings of the neighbors, and that has always bothered me some. And in the case of the request for a hearing that was ultimately canceled, it shows that apparently this company is recognizing that working in a neighborhood is important, and I don't know what all happened down there, but I appreciate that something happened that made neighbors be more welcoming of what will ultimately be their new neighbor. This project specifically now, though, from my comments that were made on it almost a year ago now, really about the only thing that I see that has changed is I commented last year that we don't know where the electricity will ultimately go, and we do now. But that was a small factor, and I just also want to point out to your accurate statement about that they're eager to get started, but they were eager to get started last year already, and here we are a year later still trying to figure out where the turbines are going to be. And so that's another of my frustrations with these outfits, that everything is always, you know, on the edge of a crisis. They need these decisions almost immediately, and we make decisions and hurry the process along, and all kinds of time goes by with little or nothing happening. But like I say, outside of from my opinion that I talked about a year ago, really the only thing in my mind that has changed is the fact that we now know where the electricity is going.
Yeah, I would just, I don't think I maybe said it the first time through, that the Seacrest requested a hearing on July 21st. The request was withdrawn on August 4th of 2014. I don't know if I brought that out. And it was interesting because that was also the date we had a special meeting, and we had a basically a hearing date set, and that happened right before the meeting date, so I withdrew it. I would say that in all of our cases, whenever we go through, whether it's a pipeline or a power line or a wind farm, I think the commission is very efficient and aggressive. We don't ever, I don't say we hurry things along in the sense that we overlook anything. We make sure due diligence. In this case, the conditional use permit from the county was amended. The SHPPA has responded, all the appropriate agencies. So I do think we focus on, go above and beyond to have special meetings to make decisions, but we don't ever shortchange the process. But we do move things along as aggressively as we can.
Is there any further discussion? And seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Nay.
Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. I don't believe we have any motions from Commissioner Crispin, so Commissioner Fedorchuk.
I move the commission approve North Dakota Pipeline Company LLC's July 1st, 2014 tree and shrub inventory plan, North Dakota Pipeline Company LLC 24-inch crude oil pipeline Sandpiper Project siting application case number PU-13-848.
Second.
I think the motion is pretty self-explanatory, and I don't think a lot of additional comment is needed to describe it.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
My second and last motion, I move the commission suspend the tariff revisions and reduce the filing fee to $10,000 in Northern States Power Company Natural Gas Interruptible Service Tariff Case Number PU-14-626.
Second.
This is an application to revise the tariff that NSP has on their natural gas interruptible service. I'm not sure if this has been triggered by the problem last winter on the with the natural gas line, where there were like a lot of company customers who were asked to interrupt as a result of that line breakage. And this tariff, from what I understand of it, would seek to increase some of the fees on those companies who don't agree to interrupt. And so, but it's real early on. This is just the first step in getting the ball rolling and reviewing the company's request.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I don't have any discussion on this one. I just would throw out there that it's interesting. Last week I had several calls about the, we've had some rate cases on MDU from natural gas, of course. And Excel a while back has changed some things. I'm sort of getting a few phone calls of people that are now showing some frustration that it used to be a smaller monthly charge. And now that monthly charge has creeped up a little bit. I'm starting to get a few phone calls that people are, of course, paying that charge in the summer and not using gas. So it's interesting. This is a different situation in a sense. It's not dealing with the rate on the monthly charge, but it'll be interesting to see if there's what kind of involvement comes back on this.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any further discussion?
Now, one more thing, I guess, just to clarify that, I think if we were to make those kinds of sweeping changes, that would be more of a rate case issue.
Oh, absolutely.
This is just a change to the tariff that the company is seeking, so I just want to clarify that, and it's a tariff on this specific rate on the natural gas interruptible service customers. So it isn't a rate case, per se.
Right. Yeah, I would just be interested if lot of times in these tariffs, we suspend them, and there's not much public pushback from businesses or anybody. It'll be interesting if you do get the businesses coming in and say, no, 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 we like the tariff the way it is.
And I'll be interested to know what triggered this and how last winter's experience with the explosion and the taking out of that Viking line for a couple of days, how that, if that had anything to do with this request or not.
Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right. Thank you, Darrell. Anything else, Commissioner?
No.
Okay. I don't really have any closing comments, Commissioner Christman.
I don't either.
Commissioner Fedorcha?
No closing comments for me.
Okay. Well, we'd be happy to answer any questions if there are from folks in the audience.
Yes, Commissioner Christman, clarify your no vote. Just one more time. Was it born of the frustration you talked about? With wind farms generally, or was there something specific to Thunder Spirit?
You know, you might want to go back and read my opinion from my dissent from last time, but so I'll just say generally, because I don't want to go through the whole thing. I guess we can if you'd like, but you know, we have our renewable energy objective of 10%. The objective does not say at least 10%, or it not doesn't say 10% or more. It says 10%. We're far beyond that already. Last fall, I think we had 1,600 megawatts of wind power in the state. Been other additions since. You know, I'm starting to recognize that some things are going to need to be ignored since this summer with the EPA regulations coming out. Right now, until something changes there, there's almost no possibility of building a coal plant. And so I'm not sure how we get to the point of adding generation. And I also am viewing maybe cooperatives that we don't regulate as much as investor-owned utilities. I'm not sure if there should be a difference there either. I think it takes more study and contemplation. But in this case specifically, for MDU to be buying this, we know that a large part of this is going to be on the bills of North Dakota ratepayers. And with that renewable energy mandate at 10% and us already being far in excess of it, I'm just not comfortable with supporting this to add another big batch of wind power onto their electric bills.
Commissioner, you called it a mandate. It's not really a mandate, is it?
Objective.
Objective, yes.
If I could, Dave, offer a countering viewpoint. The one of the things that I think is very important to understand is the commission's roles in different things. And our role in this case is a role of siting a wind farm. And so the company went through and they laid their siting criteria out. They met the requirements of the county. They met the requirements of the SHPO. They met the requirements of all the agencies. They met our requirements for setbacks. And so you've got a case where a company wants to build a wind farm. So that in my view, they clearly met all the requirements. There was changes, which I think they could have done a better job of early. But this company has met the requirements to build a wind farm, and so I voted for it. Now, the whole discussion about whether or not this should be included in MDU's rates, that's not appropriate discussion for during siting. That's a discussion when MDU comes back for rate recovery. When MDU comes in for their next rate case, just as we've done in the past, fully scrutinize all of their wind investments, all of their coal investments, all of their natural gas investments. That's the time when we go through what's appropriate in our role of rate making. Now, the companies have in their disposal advanced determination of prudence, where oftentimes the companies will come in and request ADP on something. And so that's what I think the companies really do. When, you know, MDU has been in front of the commission several times for advanced determination of prudence, like in the Heskett 88 megawatt station, they came in and they requested a determination the commission deemed it prudent. So when we see that case back, I guess that's in front of us now in a different shape. But when that comes back to us, they know that the commission is going to return something because we've already deemed it a prudent project. So while I certainly respect my colleagues' viewpoints, I think it's when is the appropriate time to have this discussion, because Thunder Spirit's building the wind farm. They requested to do it, and they've met the siting criteria. And I do look forward to the discussion about how much is the right amount of wind, how much is the right amount of natural gas, what's the right amount of coal in the rate cases, which we've heavily scrutinized. The Xcel Energy's rate case that we just finished, we took them to task on a whole bunch of wind farms, and it ended up sorting itself out with some leverage that we put on them to build some thermal generation in the state. So I certainly have frustration about putting too much wind in the grid, but I figure the best time for that discussion is during the appropriate rate cases and the IRP discussions. I had to double check here. 107, and I think it was a higher number of turbines. 43 turbines.
Okay, so that's the final 43.
43 2.5 megawatt turbines up to 107.5 megawatts.
I probably have asked this before, but is it odd for a wind farm to go down in terms of size or generation size?
I don't know that it's odd. I think they go in with what they hope to sell. So they request up to 150 megawatts. It probably, this is just speculation, but MDU has probably worked out an agreement that they only want to buy 107.5 megawatts. And I suspect that at a rate case sometime, then we'll be heavily questioning MDU why 107.5 wind was selected. But that's just speculation. But it seems reasonable. MDU's here. I suppose you could ask them that question.
To add to that, though, my reading of this, though, still allows them up to 150 megawatts, so they can still add more, but they would just need to update their noise and shadow flicker studies.
Yeah, good point.
So they're just not building the whole thing. They haven't really shrunk it.
Overall, on the, do you have anything?
No.
So was I. I defer to you if you'd like.
No, go ahead.
Well, in terms of the FTE requests, there's one in weights and measures, one in natural gas.
Well, I'll give you the breakdown, Dave. The understand this is a budget request.
It's a request, yes.
It's a budget request that all three of us have had discussion. This is where all three of us kind of settle in as a group. But the one weights and measures position is in the requested budget, 1.5 for a natural gas inspector. And then 3.5 for our proposed intrastate liquids program and 3.0 for our proposed rail safety program. So it's there's some numbers involved in there, I guess. So I guess as we weigh through those, you know, the weights and measures in the natural gas position, those are, you know, what's already we need to do the job. And I think that will I think that's one bucket, if you will. The other two, that's where I think the discussion will really settle down in the legislative session about what the state wants to do and what we may or may not be able to bring to the table.
In terms of the rail proposal, I am happy to talk about it this morning, but I do have an announcement planned next week with some folks who also want to talk about that issue. So I had intended to do that in more detail next week with some legislators who are also on board with the rail proposal.
And then on the, if I could, on the interstate liquids program, that one we've been talking about for a while. And that we've got discussion that we've had with the PHMSA folks and the timing of everything. But one thing I do wanted to have for the liquids program is just the expectation that the way this potentially would play out is, of course, we'll see what the governor's recommended budget says, and then we'll go during our budget presentation. But the one of the things that we're really trying to look at now, hone in with the different groups, is, okay, what is it that we could do and make sure that if these programs do come to the Public Service Commission, that they come with enough people that we can do it properly. And that was, I go back to the example of weights and measures. You know, there was a reduction in our weights and measures authorization last session, and we got into this. Now we're like, you know what, we need that position back. That's one thing that if this does move forward, it has to be done with the way we can fully do it correctly. You know, and 3.5, I think, is a minimum for a liquids program. So that's where, speaking for myself, that's where if there's any changes to that, that really has concern that I would bring to the table that make sure we can do the program. We've got to have enough people, and they've got to have enough salary to do it. We've seen turnover on our weights and our pipeline safety position because they're in such high demand. And that goes back to our equity package, that we put in an equity package that we've got to retain the people that we have. And it's very challenging to hold our great employees because they're being offered up lots of different things out there. So.
Equity package, what does that translate into for a percentage increase for employees?
Oh, look at Agent Galleon. It's not very much, though.
Do it. It's not calculated that way. It's more targeted on folks whose positions are in high demand and salaries might be low based on the market. So it isn't across the board.
No. Good point.
Do you have any idea how many you've lost over the past maybe year or 2 years?
Employees?
Employees because of salary issues?
Well, it's always hard to exactly pinpoint why an employee decided to pick something. But every employee, I think we've had – I'm thinking seven comes to mind of people that have moved on in the last couple of years. And I can speak for the pipeline safety positions. All of the pipeline safety positions we've lost have come in and said, Brian, I really like working here, but I got offered a job making twice as much as you're paying me. And so it's not a $100, $200 a month. It's literally for our pipeline positions, their pay has been doubled. And so and I appreciate that the private sector pays more, and that's the way it is. But it's just we have to do what we can to hold every position is important, but I hate to make this statement, but there are some key positions that are considered that way because the training pipeline is so long. For a pipeline inspector, the program is, 36 months, Pat? It's 3 years to get someone fully trained in one of these pipeline safety positions. So the amount of investment that the commission makes, the state makes, to train these individuals up, we've got to retain them. And so this last two-year period that three of us have put in within the policy that we have the abilities to do retention payments and incentive for recruiting if we have the general fund available. So we're going to use every tool we can to try to retain these skilled workers that we have. But understanding, too, there are just the reality of it's a, like Julie brought up, it's a growing environment out there.
If I could add a few comments on the pipeline side of things. This budget really recognizes our unanimous belief in the importance of pipelines. And pipelines really are the solution for effectively transporting this very valuable commodity to market in a way that also allows citizens in the state to live with a high quality of life, live peacefully with less dust, less noise, less congestion. Really long term, it's going to make North Dakota, Western North Dakota, live more balanced with this industry. So a big piece on pipelines is not just the construction and the, you know, the siting and construction of them, which Brian talked about, we're doing and trying to work through in a very reasonable, efficient, fair, fast way. But it also is comes down to the safe, long-term operations of the pipelines. This budget takes the next step for North Dakota in adding a hazardous liquids pipeline safety program. Currently, that is handled by PHMSA. It's a federal agency that manages these nationwide. PHMSA was the overseeing agency on the oil spill up in Tioga that was discovered in the farmer's field. That was PHMSA jurisdiction. This budget recognizes that with the growing presence of pipelines in our state, the growing importance of them, and the growing concern of citizens that they be managed effectively, that it is a good idea to have state personnel in charge of that oversight. I think that we can do that well from the PSC. I think that having state personnel who are accountable just to us, who can't be pulled off to other emergencies or challenges in other parts of the country, makes a lot of sense in this time, and recognizing that this industry is here to stay and we need to build the systems long term to effectively manage the industry. So I think this is a really great program, a great step forward. I look forward to advocating for it during the legislative session. And like Brian said, we tried to make sure that we're asking for the right amount of employees to do this job well, not do it as with the lowest cost possible, but to get the resources we need to do a really good job.
So those 3.5 FTEs, would those essentially be oil pipeline inspectors? Is that
the way I guess we're envisioning it is three of them would be definitely dedicated 100% inspectors. The 0.5 would be some type of a program manager role inside this office. So the three would be out in the field doing what they do all the time. The 0.5 would be, like I said, I don't know that we can.
A joint, right? The 0.5 would be one from the natural gas side and one from the liquid side. So there would be combined one person who would oversee the whole pipeline safety program.
Right. And I can't pass up this opportunity. You know, gentlemen, that Monday was August 11th, 811 day. So we build hard to get these pipelines in the ground. We got to protect them. So, and actually on that, the North Dakota One Call Board is meeting today at 10 o'clock. The three of us are probably swinging by there at different times. But the on those events we did Monday, North Dakota One Call, Common Ground Alliance, and the PSC, we're spending a lot of time together just to try to figure out the best thing we can do for training and education. And one of the things that's coming out of that discussion on the pipeline safety side of it is the last session we went and tweaked the 10 days, locates are now good for 21 days. The max fine was $5,000. Now it's $25,000. One of the things that's kind of happening now is that the giving this commission the authority, requesting this commission the authority, that if we've got a bad actor out there that continues to violate the law, that we would have the ability to directly suspend their license. And so we've had some cases where we find companies and they just said, we're not paying. And then we kind of, then what do we do? So there's a lot of legal discussion back and forth, and Alana's looking at me. It's quite interesting how that might work itself out, but that's that it's not so much monetary what we're picking up in different jurisdictions. It's the ability that we've got to continue to get the attention of these companies out there that are continuing to violate 811.
One other thing I wanted to point out, getting back to the new programs, the rail and the hazardous liquids, when we evaluate this, it's hard to put the right numbers on because, you know, those types of employees, it's not like we call over to job service and have them send over a couple of trained pipeline inspectors, you know. It's going to, first of all, you know, take through the session and into next year until we know that, in fact, it's approved. Then we've got this long ramp up of getting PHMSA and DOT approval on these kinds of new programs, of finding people with some background in and getting the proper training for them. So we're really trying to aim at something, you know, based on projections of where we might be in pipeline activity and rail traffic 2-3 years down the road. So it's quite a tough target to really define with pinpoint accuracy.
Assuming the legislature does approve these positions and these programs, what is the timeline for getting PHMSA and DOT approval? How long might that take before this program's actually, these programs are actually in place in North Dakota?
Well, I can speak for the pipeline side of it. It'd probably be another, think here, what year is it now? It's 2014. I would say by late 2016, you might see a interstate liquids program fully up and running. If you look at the ramp up where you go through 2015, it would be potentially approved. You hire these individuals sometime in the fall of 15, so they can be hired and start working without completing the training, but they have to then go to the training. So by, let's say, January of 16, you've got someone on board that can go to the initial training, and by the end of the year, they've got some qualifications to get out there and do some inspections. But quite honestly, it would actually, now that I think about this, 3 years after that was when you'd be fully trained, but you could hire someone with training. So that's where it's kind of hard, that if we made really good hires with the amount of salary, we could hire somebody fully trained. So, but that's where I think that fall of 2016 is probably a fair estimate based on the data we know correctly.
And the rail, I don't think it's going to take quite as long. I would envision the DOT process, the agreement with them it's different than with PHMSA, because in the case of PHMSA, you're actually taking over the whole program for PHMSA. In the case of rail, you're just supplementing their work. So the agreement is fairly straightforward. I've already had calls from folks who are interested in working on this. So I'm pretty confident that we'll have some good applicants for these positions. They have to have rail experience. That's the key there. And we have to be able to pay them enough to attract those kind of candidates. So we've accounted for that in the program planning. And so I would envision bringing them on board. Also, the training process is not as long. It's 6 to 12 months, and it's on-the-job training, so they're out there almost immediately working with the federal inspectors. So I would say mid to late 2015.
And what exactly would they be doing? These are rail inspectors, loading facility inspectors, basically?
Or? Do you want to get into the whole spiel?
In a nutshell.
There's this, yeah. Well, it's hard to do it in a nutshell without explaining how the whole thing works, but they would be additional personnel out on the ground inspecting track and inspecting the probably the motor operations side of the rail services. Two inspectors working kind of in tandem with the federal inspectors, but accountable entirely to the state. Just more eyes on the ground every day inspecting the rail system and looking for safety infractions and problems that could cause accidents.
One thing, Mike, if I could put out there is just the, you know, the growth in infrastructure in the state, I think, is the driver for a lot of this budget request. I mean, you go back to the, you know, the weights and measures we've talked about quite a bit, but even that natural gas pipeline inspector, I mean, last session we went in and asked for a second position. Now this will be a third. And, you know, the growth of the infrastructure is just really hard to predict what you're going to need. And so I suspect that there'll be a lot of discussion back and forth, and as our numbers get refined. But this will probably be, until the growth, the build-out settles out in North Dakota, you'll probably see this in every commission budget going forward, tweaks in FTEs based on, you know, the data that says X amount of pipelines means X amount of inspectors. And so that's really the, you know, we're trying to give the best guess we can of what the infrastructure is going to look like, you know, basically almost 3 years from now. So that's the challenges that we're trying to work through.
What is the total budget?
Sure, the total, of course I had it right here. This time around it is $24,071,000. But I would caution you that $9 million of that is general fund. So what's the math there minus that? $15 million would be AML upstairs, the reclamation program. So it's the general fund is roughly $9 million. And that's if everything that we ask for is approved, which is probably highly unlikely. So, you know, if you go back to compare, you know, our budget was roughly, general fund was roughly $7 million. So it is a change. I mean, that's a $2 million difference. But you go back to, that really comes down to FTEs and the two-year cycle, the way it lays out there. But, you know, I keep going back to, this is our initial budget request. And we'll, as this thing plays out, we'll see a governor's recommended budget. Then each three of us will then see where we're at, and we'll have our budget briefing downstairs and all the different sub-packages that come out of it. And it'll be interesting what the legislature does with our budget, because last time we submitted our budget and there was a bill that came on completely out of a member, House member, that was a bill that basically went back to a budget from several years ago. And so that was an interesting process. So we were there. Yes. Well, 6. The total.
6.
Yeah, the total fund was $20,479,000 this year, and Josh gave me $7,091,000 for general fund and special funds, because we have some special funds in there too, if you will. Like the litigation fund was considered a special fund, so it's hard to exactly. I just try to put them in two buckets because it's easier to walk through. But there is a special fund for the litigation, which was almost $1 million, and then there's some other telecom monies in there too.
Just to compare, I'm trying to compare apples to apples here. So this general fund request is about $9 million, you said, and that would compare to that $7 million.
Yep, that would be a very fair comparison.
Those are right, Josh.
He's going to give you the
9.7 million is the current. What the exact number?
Sure,
$9,711,489.
Isn't it the base budget request or not?
There's some adjustments to that.
It's very hard to pull out exactly because the way that gets coded in there.
The current budget general fund is $7,091,740.
Okay. All right. Any other questions, gentlemen?
Nope. I'm good.
Okay.
Although it's interesting that you mentioned the rail. That's a different kind of training.
Oh, the puns are endless on rail.
We also sent the same legislature on board.
Yep. All right. Don't think I am not chuckling regularly on these.
Alrighty, we'll go ahead and close the special meeting, and do you mind commuting immediately for our administrative portion?
That's a good idea.
All right, we'll close the special meeting. Thank you.